With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Jake, Newcastle supporter. You can get me on Twitter at JakeJackal with two N's, and I write for EPL Index and The Boot Room.
Hi guys, I'm Sam. You can find me at Sam_Carp on Twitter. I occasionally write for the Eagles Beak, the Palace fan site, and you can also probably find me on match days tweeting my discontent on the official Twitter account as well.
All right, thanks so much for joining us, guys. Sam, thanks very much for joining us for the very first time, and thanks to Jay for sending you our way. Obviously, everybody very familiar with Jay's stylings over from the Eagles Beak, and then I'm sure translation-wise, yours as well. We're going to start off with Fulham, though, a club that none of us support, and just kind of bring up their defensive struggles thus far. They've already conceded 25 goals this season, and we mentioned at the start of the year that with all of the transfers that they'd made, especially in the back line, that they basically had a new defense this year, and we kind of questioned whether or not it would work, and in the early stages, it certainly seems to have not. Do you think Fulham can fix their defensive issues internally with the players they have, or will they just have to rely on their attack to score enough to carry them through to safety this year?
It's an interesting one because I think everyone was talking about Fulham in the transfer window. You know, signed a lot of high-profile players, talking about them as potential top-half contenders. I was always not totally for that view. I thought they'd signed a few too many players and it was perhaps a little top-heavy, and that seems to have been the case. A few interesting stats. They're currently on course to concede the most goals over the course of a Premier League season, and that includes the season played over 42 games. So that shows how badly they have been defending, and that it would break the record for a 38-game season by 20-plus goals if they can keep conceding goals at the current rate. So it is really bad for them at the moment. I think against Arsenal, people are kind of writing it off, saying, oh, it's Arsenal, you know, that can happen. But if you concede four goals against this Cardiff team, that's really not good. And I think there are big, big problems at Fulham. I see a lot of the Fulham fans I sort of follow on Twitter, they seem to be still behind Jukanovic. I know Russ Goldman, who comes on this show sometimes, he's still very pro Jukanovic. And I can see why. He sort of, you know, built a good team there. He plays good football. The way he talks, I think he's quite likeable. And he seems to have really embraced Fulham. So I can see why they're sort of pro him. But I just don't think it's been getting any better since the first game of the season. I think there were question marks then when they played Crystal Palace. I think Sam might agree, but I think in that game, Fulham were on top for long periods. But it was just a couple of poor mistakes at the back and that let Palace in. And it was just that Premier League quality that Palace had to win that game. They didn't even play that well, Palace. It was just they took the chances that Fulham gave them. And it seems to have been a continuation for Fulham over the next few games. They do dominate a lot of the play, and Kev, you'll say against Tottenham they played well for a period after half time, but yeah. It's just without the ball they're very bad. They're probably the worst team in the Premier League without the ball, and that's a problem because they're not always going to have the ball. And in the periods when they don't have the ball, they seem to give up a lot of big chances. I don't think the defenders they've got are that good. I think Chambers is a bit dodgy. I think Mawson, although, you know, he scored a few goals from set piece, I think he's always been a bit shaky at the back, and I don't think he's really been the answer either. And you know, they've got three goalkeepers, and they don't know which one to play. They brought in two really good goalkeepers, I think, over the summer. Sergio Rico, who was at Seville before, he's a really good goalkeeper, but he's just not really been given a chance. They've gone for Bettinelli. So it seems they don't really know which players to play, and that seems to be a big problem. I also think Mitrovic is a problem. I know he scores a lot of goals, but as a Newcastle fan, I've seen a lot of Mitrovic, and you need the team to play completely for him, and sometimes that can really damage your defensive setup. That's why he wasn't didn't fit in under Benitez because he didn't do any work up top, and the team really needed to be suited for him. And Fulham have built the team around him and they've got the best out of it, but I think it's been to the detriment of their own defence because he doesn't do a lot off the ball, doesn't hold up the ball very well, and I think that there's problems there. So I think it's a massive problem, and I don't see where out of the current squad and the current manager they're going to fix it. And I think it's wishful thinking to think their attack and score as many goals as they're going to concede to keep them up. I just don't think it's going to happen. So I think they're definitely relegation candidates. And I think that for me, there's probably five or six teams that are in danger of going down. I'd say Newcastle, definitely one of them, Huddersfield, Cardiff, Fulham, Burnley and Southampton. They're the six for me. I think they're all in. And if Fulham keep conceding goals like that, I think they're going to be one of them. You can't score a rate to really warrant defending like that. And I think I think Jukanovic is probably going to have to go. And I would be surprised if Fulham got rid of him quite quickly. I think that the board there have spent a lot of money and he's not the answer, I don't think, especially at the back. And unless they've, if they want to wait till January and sign a load more players in defence, they can. But I think that's a risk. I think
because that's what they did to get them into this situation.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I think they're going to have to, I think Jukanovic is going to be the one to go because I just don't think he can coach a defence. I just don't think he can. And I think that now he's not coaching a team at the top of the championship. I think he now needs to coach a defence. He can't do it. So I think, I can't see it improving anytime soon.
It's one of those things, isn't it? I mean, they spent really big in the transfer window, but what you've kind of got to remember is that they're now building a back four from nothing. On that opening day, I think they started something like 8 or 9 new signings against us, and it's not all going to click into play straight away. It's quite a weird strategy. They've not really had a consistent back four throughout the season. They're testing Chambers and Mawson. The next game, it might be Chambers and Ream. It might be Chambers and LaMarchand or someone else. So it all just seems kind of like they're just dropping players and hoping they sort of fall into place. And sort of harking back to that that game on the opening day that you mentioned, Jake, you're right, Palace didn't play very well at all. I was there. Fulham kind of dominated for large parts. It's interesting what you mentioned about Mitrovic as well, because I thought he kind of pinned Sacco and Tompkins in a way that I'd never seen a striker do before. But at the same time, we went in 1-0 up at half-time, having not really had to do very much. And as they sort of started chasing, the game became even more expansive in their play. It just opened up more and more gaps for players like Zaha and Townsend to exploit. And it just looked increasingly likely that we could kind of score 2, 3, 4. And we hadn't really done enough to kind of deserve that sort of result in the first place. And I think it's kind of, they've come up playing exactly the same way they did in the Championship, which is a very attractive brand of football. It's good to watch. It's attacking. But if you can sort of get away with it in the lower divisions, when you can expect to sort of score more than your opposition, you're going to say, right, if you score 2, we'll back ourselves to score 4 or 5. You're not going to get away with that in the Premier League. The defences are a lot savvier. The attack is a lot more clinical. And I think that's kind of something which has caught them by surprise so far this season.
Yeah, they do look in genuine trouble at the moment. I mean, Cardiff had scored 4 goals before this week, and then they scored 4 in this week. Also, for a little seasonal context, last year, Manchester City conceded just 2 more goals all season than what Fulham have conceded here through, week 8, week 9? Mm-hmm. So it's very, very much a problem there, to be sure. I would specifically like to clue in on Alfie Mawson, because I thought that the fact that they got him for... what was it, like 20 million from Swansea after there had been reports of 30 earlier in the market, I thought that had been an absolute steal. But I think what we're finding out is he needs to be playing with somebody a bit more solid than himself to allow him to kind of get that range, get forward a little bit more, pass and distribute in that way. But without that player, because there's nobody that's solid next to him right now. Like, Jake, you might disagree considering he plays for you now, but Federico Fernandez seemed a good pair with... Alfie Moss, and of course at times they played Vanderhorn there as well in a back three, but it just seems like he can't carry the defense on his own, and it leads to this really weird situation, like you mentioned, where I think they have to address it in the transfer market, but addressing this position in the transfer market is what led to all of these problems. So they're really playing from behind in that sense, where you're gambling to fix your previous failed gamble, which is not typically something that you want to do, is be caught in a hole like that. But I agree. I don't think they can score enough to get themselves out of this problem. They have to find a solution to the problem fast if they want to stay in the Premier League, which, as both of you mentioned, is kind of crazy considering the kind of clout that they brought with them up to the Premier League. All right, now we're going to move on to Nikola Vlasic, which may surprise some people as he's not currently in the Premier League, but he is still a player of Everton's on loan at CSKA Moskva, currently playing in the Champions League, of course. He was recently quoted saying that only the top six sides in the Premier League play great football under foreign managers, while the rest only focus on defending and physicality. Obviously paraphrasing here, but do you agree with that take or not? And if you do think that that's the case, do you think it's a problem if that's what's happening here?
I mean, this is interesting based on what we've just moved on from, because Fulham can't defend and they play attacking football. So in that sense, it's completely wrong. I get his point to an extent. I think when you're playing for one of the teams below the top six, you're always, you know, you're not going to be competing for league titles. There's going to be there's going to be times when you have to defend. There's going to be times when, you know, perhaps physicality does win out over style. It's not the Spanish league. There's not many teams that opt to pass a lot of the time. I think Palace are a good example. I think Palace play good football on the whole, but I think there's a lot of physical players in that team. And I think at times, you know, they can rely on set pieces. They can, you know, go direct. And I think that's a tactic all Premier League teams need. I think it's maybe the style of the league rather than, you know, the teams opting to play that way. I just think it's just the way, you know, you need to play sometimes. If Everton tried to play like Manchester City against Manchester City, they'd be beaten. So, you know, there's got to be a case of being a little bit proactive with your tactics and playing a way to suit your opponent. I think Newcastle, we're a great example of that. I think at times under Benitez, it might not seem like at the moment, but at times we can play some quite good football. But when we play the big teams, we're quite often criticised for our tactics. We opt to defend, we opt to barely move out of our half, but that's the way that we, you know, occasionally sometimes get a result. So that's the way we're going to play. I just think for a player, I can see why you'd want to play in the Premier League for one of these mid-table teams, because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, the money that goes with it, that the exposure you get. But I think that you might have a bit more fun playing your football abroad in a league that, you know, isn't so dominated by top six teams that are just so much better than the rest and that have the finances and the resources, the training ground, the stadium that's just so much better than the rest. I think I can see why players don't want to play that way. But I think there's a lot of teams that play good football. I think Bournemouth play good football. I think Huddersfield play some very good football at times. And I think the way they approach games against the top six is slightly different to the rest. I think they're a little bit more proactive. They're a little bit more likely to attack against Liverpool. They were quite often leaving 3-on-3 at the back, which was crazy, but it seemed to work for them, and they created a lot of chances, and they actually outshot Liverpool in the game and attempted more shots on goal against Liverpool than any team has in the Premier League this season, even more than Manchester City. So, you know, there are ways to be attacking against the top teams that work, but you need to have a manager that can coach that style. And I think a lot of the managers in the Premier League rather prefer to be a little bit more defensive, because at the end of the day, their job's on the line. And if you go away to Manchester City and get beat 6, doesn't matter who you are, you're going to come under criticism, and if another couple of poor results, you're going to be under pressure. So I can see why managers don't opt to play that way. But there are teams that do. I think Vlasic's comments have a little bit of merit, but I think it as an overall statement, it's a little bit wrong. Because I think there are teams that play some good football and approach games against the top six teams in a positive manner. But on the whole, I can see why he's made those comments. I just think they're not completely factual.
I think the problem is that it's such a top-heavy league, is that it's only sort of highlighted the way the teams outside the top six play when they're playing against the top six. So you don't actually notice that they are playing quite good football when they're playing against each other, because there's always sort of been that sort of idea that there's the top six, they have their own league, and then there's the rest below it. There's that team that's trying to finish in seventh, which incidentally was Burnley last year, who probably don't play the most glamorous brand of football. but at the same time, like you said there, Palace played some decent stuff last year, I thought. Again, Bournemouth this year, Watford have been playing some all right stuff as well. It's an easy thing for Vlasic to say, especially being at a club like Everton, which is kind of on that periphery as well. They've flirted with the top six in the past. They also that they've sort of played an attractive brand in the past as well. So yeah, I don't know. I don't think I agree with him. I think it's kind of, you've got to adapt to the opposition that you're playing. Teams aren't going to come out and be extremely expansive against Manchester City because they don't have the players at their disposal to do so. Whereas if, for example, Bournemouth are up against Palace, they're more likely to sort of go at them, push more players forward. But if you do that against one of the top sizes, then you're going to get punished.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, that if you only watch the top six, you'd think every other team was defensive. But as you said, when they play each other, you get really interesting matches. I was kind of hoping that Wolves-Watford would be that this week, but it wasn't. But a lot of times you do see teams come out and play some really expansive and exciting football. Also, Jake, I thought your Huddersfield shout may catch some people by surprise, just based on how poor their standings are, but in central midfield they're actually pretty good. Like, Billing has had a fairly good season. They just cannot score goals for the life of them. Maybe them and Fulham should like combine and make some weird fusion. On the whole, I do disagree with these comments, and I'm not sure I would have put it as succinctly as the fact that it's what happens when you only watch top six matches and who they're playing. So we'll just leave it there. Very well said, Sam. We'll wrap up with news and notes by talking about Manchester United. It's increasingly looked like Mourinho's going to stay. We're going to avoid all of the antics again from the weekend, just because it gets very tiresome if you're going to try to keep up with all of that, although admittedly this time he was somewhat the victim. But sweeping that under the rug, with him looking more and more like he's going to be staying at Manchester United past this season, especially with his recent comments about being willing to stay beyond this contract, what do you think like the best case scenario is for Manchester United in 2018-19?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think the best thing for Manchester United is probably target the cup competitions now and just hope for the best in them. I think on their day, they could probably beat anybody in the Champions League. I don't think there's a lot of good... There's not many standout teams in Europe this season, I don't think. Real Madrid have got their problems. I don't think Barcelona are completely unbeatable. Exactly. So I think there's a lot of Premier League teams that can look at that competition with, you know, with confidence. Man United are one of them. Mourinho has his faults, but he's won that competition before with two different clubs. So, you know, he's not totally hopeless. I just think there have been problems, but that you can take a lot of encouragement out of it is to the two recent matches. The second half against Newcastle, they were good. Second half against Chelsea, they were good. You know, if they put those performances in over 90 minutes, they'll start winning games even against the bigger teams. So I think they should look for that. And, you know, I think they could still try to do something in the league. I think Champions League finish isn't beyond them. I think Arsenal and Tottenham and Chelsea, you know, they've all started a lot better, but I think they're the teams that Man United could look to compete with. It's difficult, but I think target the cup competitions and reassess at the end of the season. I don't think they're going to get a quality manager to replace Mourinho. So I'll just wait to the end of the season and ride it out and just see what happens. I think even Mourinho in his current state can win competitions, and he rarely doesn't get success. So I think if they look for those cup competitions, they could do all right. But I think there's been reason to be optimistic recently. I think they're, even though the first half performances against Newcastle and Chelsea weren't great, I think, and some of the goals they conceded are very poor, I think at least there's a bit of a reaction after that. And I think if they can manage to find a team, let them settle, let them, you know, grow together, don't make so many changes, and try to keep the media sort of circus around the club to a minimum, which is difficult with Mourinho in charge. But, you know, the way he managed that touchline spat at the weekend was quite good for him. I think he managed it quite well afterwards. So, I think they should have got rid of it. He shouldn't have been allowed to stay around for this season. I think there was cracks in the relationship between him and a lot of the players at the end of last season and in the summer. I think maybe a change could have been made then if Man United were, you know, thinking ahead and really considering if he was going to be a success this year. But now that decision wasn't made, I think they just got to stick with him and just hope for the best. But like I said, I could see them going quite far in the Champions League. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I think that's the type of thing that Mourinho could do. They won the Europa League a couple of seasons ago, so they've got that European experience. Last year in the Champions League was a bit disappointing, but I think they could target that. And if they put everything in that basket, it's a massive risk, but you know the rewards are massive. And if they did, I think they could compete in that competition. So I think that's what they need to do. Just ride out, hope you know, to put a few results together in the league, try and get in around that top four and just try and win a cup. And it's not great for Manchester United, but it's better than what they had under Van Gaal and Moyes. So I think they've just got to take it and then reassess in the summer. And that's probably when the change needs to be made then.
I'd be really, really frustrated if I was a United fan, because every time it looks like Mourinho is on the cusp of getting sacked, he manages to pluck a result out of nowhere or a couple of decent performances. Because, to be honest, it always just feels like it's only going to end one way with him. I think a few good performances can kind of mask the underlying, or paper over the cracks, whatever you want to call it, mask the underlying issues. But fundamentally, United haven't sort of been playing the football that the fans want them to be playing for years. Well, not since Fergie left. I don't think they've made the right managerial appointment since he retired. And I think with Mourinho, he sort of... I always feel like players like Lukaku, Rashford, Martial, even Sanchez, they're kind of like prisoners under his leadership. It really frustrates me to watch. And I can kind of imagine that as a United fan, it must be even worse when you have these sort of players at your disposal and they're forced to sort of play this much more sort of conservative approach. Whereas I think if they had a manager with a sort of more expansive, ideology or the way he approached games, they'd be a really, really exciting side to watch. Whereas whenever I'm watching the United game, I feel like they're being strangled to an extent. They're strangling the game, and yeah, they're still not sort of where they should be. It's all well and good saying, yeah, challenge for the top four, have a go at the cups, but this is Manchester United. They're a team that should be sort of, they should be challenging for titles. They shouldn't be sort of thinking, right, maybe we'll have a run in the cup this season. They should be sort of right up there every single time. They're a club that's been built on that kind of success. And I think Mourinho gets a little bit of an easy ride just because he kind of creates headlines elsewhere a lot of the time.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that you brought up their negative play style, especially in juxtaposition to our last topic point, which was saying that the top six sides all play great football. And here you have a side that at least financially is certainly in that conversation, that clearly are not playing very fun football. It's a very strange one. We had already scheduled the Manchester United segment with Joshy to discuss what was going to happen when Mourinho was sacked and who were they were lining up. And then he just pulls it out again to kind of ensure his safety at the club, and those matches must be very frustrating for fans as well, because it shows what they're capable of. It's like the most monumental tease that in these situations, like 2-0 down against City last year, the 2-0 down against Newcastle this year, after they go behind against Chelsea, it's the perfect example of everything you've complained about at your club, and then all of a sudden for half an hour they turn it on. And then you have to wonder, why can't they play that way the rest of the time? They do look like they're strangling themselves and their creativity is being stifled. A lot of that is that every wide player at that club is actually supposed to be a striker, which certainly doesn't help with Martial and Rashford both being shifted out wide because they signed Ibrahimovic. And then you think they're finally going to get a shot. Then they get rid of Ibrahimovic. Oh, nope. Now they're going to sign Lukaku. Now, with Lukaku struggling, it would be very interesting, especially having just come off a brace, if we did see Martial play up front, or if they did let Rashford play up front, which may free them a little bit just because Lukaku has not really looked up to it this year. But on the whole, I think Jake hit it on the head that the best chance is cup competitions and aiming for top four. But I'm not sure how confident they can be in that right now. Admittedly, Tottenham aren't playing particularly well. Neither are Liverpool, but both are picking up points, which both clubs have typically dropped even when they were playing excellent football. So this year is going to be a little bit different at the top. City and Chelsea both obviously playing well. And I've mentioned many times on the show, Chelsea is the side that I'm really worried about because we know what City are. They're probably going to walk away with the title, but this Chelsea side is just really starting to grasp the Sarri system. And they are more talented than Napoli's squad were. And we saw what he could do there. For Manchester United, top four, maybe a really good cup run, but not much aside from that until they do get a new manager in there for me. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with club-specific questions for each of our guests.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, and we are back. We'll lead in with you, Jake, and it kind of follows up that last topic fairly well, because I want to talk a little bit about that Newcastle-Manchester United match. Obviously, Newcastle go up 2-0. It kind of felt like that was the turnaround that we had been waiting to see from Newcastle, that was going to kind of catalyze some momentum and really push you forward through the season, except then that second half happens, and especially that last 15 minutes, it really felt like it was coming. What did you take away from that match? Were there more positives at the time because it seemed like you were finally performing well, or is it negatives in the way that you threw away the result?
I think it's mainly negative. I think if you're 2-0 up against any team, especially, you know, what was going on at Man United at that time, I think, you know, you've got to see that first, especially with Benitez as your manager. He's very good at organising teams. He's quite good at keeping it. You know, I think we've got one of the best goal differences in the league last season outside the top six. And one of the best defences as well. So, you know, I think it was disappointing. You don't expect a Benitez team to concede 3 goals in the half, and that's what happened. I think there's reasons for it. I think some of the substitutions were poor. I just think with Newcastle at the moment, it's just a cycle of losing games. And when you've got a cycle like that, it's difficult to, you know, to stop it. Once one goal went in, it became an inevitability, just because we lose games, and that's just the fact of it. We're a losing team, so things like that happen. I think in the first half, there's a lot of positive to take. I think we should have probably been 3-0 up. I think there was a chance we should have had a penalty as well, so we can look back at that and be a little bit annoyed. But that's just been the case of our season. Like, we don't take our chances. So even when we were 2-0 up, you know, we're taking two of them, we still should have taken another one. And even at 2-2, we had a chance with Diarmé. So it was disappointing. I think we should have won that game, really. Based on the position we were in and with the manager that we have, but we didn't. So we've got to shake ourselves down from that. And then, you know, home against Brighton, that's a game you think you should be getting 3 points from, especially with Brighton's away record. I think it's quite bad. But, you know, again, it was just, if you look at the stats, like, it's ridiculous how dominant we were in that game. Expected goals has us at 2 to 0.4. I've seen a couple of models say. So, you know, we were much the better team and we created a lot more chances. It's just it's a lack of finishing them. And I think when Brighton scored from their only shot on target, it's just an inevitability then, because, you know, we're a losing team. Once you go 1-0 down, it's impossible to shake that. So it's an... I think there's been a lot of positives to take from that. There were positives to take from that first half performance against Man United. There's positives again to take from that performance against Brighton, even though we didn't win. I think we were the better team. And if we play like that more often than not, and that once we get a couple of results under our belts with Benitez as coach, you know, we'll be fine. But it's getting to that, and it's how long that's going to take. I think we don't play a top six team till Boxing Day now. So if we're still in the bottom three on Boxing Day, we've got a massive problem. I think this is a massive period for us. We've got Southampton away next, and they've only won once this season, so that's a winnable game for us. And I think maybe going away from home, away from St James's Park, away from that sort of, it's not a negative atmosphere, but it's an almost like everybody expects us to lose if we go 1-0 down, and it's difficult. I'm not saying the fans are negative, but I just think it can get like that when you're at home sometimes. So I think going away from home, I think that might be a little bit more helpful to the players, and I think we're gonna get there eventually. I still don't think Benitez will get us relegated over the course of a whole season. Even in our current position, I don't think it's gonna happen. I think we're gonna be okay eventually, but it's the getting there. And I think we are currently, you know, the reason for our position. I think nobody is faultless. I think Benitez has made some errors. I think the players have to sort of step up, and there's a lot of players in that team playing beneath themselves at the moment. So whether they need to be dropped, that's another question. But then do we have the players to come in? We don't, because we spent our summer, pinching pennies. Mike Ashley didn't want to spend money. And this is where we're at now. We've this is completely of our own doing, completely of Mike Ashley's doing. And I don't, although I don't agree with, you know, giving Benitez no criticism at all, because he's made mistakes. Like, the team, the squad that is there should have had more points than we currently do. So there has to be fault at Benitez's door. But he's managing with it, two hands tied behind his back. So it's difficult to really dig into him, because if he'd have been given a fair budget over the summer, we would have progressed. We finished 10th. That was a chance for us to progress, and we didn't take it. And now we're back at the bottom, and I think it's going to be like this until Mike Ashley sells the club. But I just hope that's someday soon, because at the moment it's just depressing to be a Newcastle fan, to be honest.
Yeah, I want to actually touch on one of those transfer topics, which was after a uninspiring first campaign for Newcastle, it looked like you were going to replace Joselu by bringing in both Yoshinori Muto, who of course scored that goal against Manchester United, as well as Solomon Rondon, which I thought was a very good signing for the little amount of money you were going to spend. Yet it's Joselu, of the three of them, that currently has the most goals with two, admittedly. But is that what you view as one of the primary problems? Is that even when you do try to improve in some areas, the improvements aren't really living up to the billing?
That's exactly it. I think we're a team that don't improve our squad well enough. I think over the summer we sold Mikel Merino, who was an under-21 Spanish international who had a lot of talent and for the first half of last season was one of the best midfielders in the league. We sold him and we brought in Ki Sung Young on a free transfer. Like, that is senseless. He's 29 years old. Where is the sense in that deal? Where are Newcastle benefiting? And the fact is, we haven't benefited from that at all. The same with Dwight Gale. We loaned out Dwight Gale. He's doing well. And we sold Mitrovic for what is reported to be £27 million. Where did that money go? Well, it didn't really go anywhere, because we spent about £7 million on Muto and we got Rondon on a loan. So where is this money going? I don't know where it's going, and that's the problem. Even if we'd have only spent what we'd brought in, even then we'd still have a better squad than we do now. It's ridiculous. I think Rondon could be a good signer, but he wasn't fit when we signed him. He's not really been fit since then. Eventually, when he gets up and going, I think he'll be good. I think Muto has a lot of potential. I think he's better suited to playing alongside somebody, and Benitez doesn't play with two strikers. So it's a signer that doesn't make a lot of sense in that respect, unless he goes on to replace Perez in the sort of number 10 position. And Perez has been terrible this season, so that is something that we should look at doing. But, you know, when we do spend money on a player, like last summer we spent £12 million on Jacob Murphy, he's barely given a game, and then his brother goes and joins Cardiff and seems to score every week. Even when we sign players, we should have signed their brothers. Basically, it's ridiculous. So we, you know, I think, but he is doing his, he's not doing, you know, he's doing as best as he can. And even a manager of his ilk will make mistakes. So, you know, there are times when he is at fault for things. But, you know, if we'd have spent a bit more money, we probably wouldn't be where we are now. But we are where we are now, so we've got to make the most of it. And I think if, you know, we will be near the relegation zone when it gets to January. That's pretty much a fact. So in January, I would expect us to go and spend some money. But then at that point, is it too little too late? It might be. But I think striker is a problem. It's been a problem for us for a long time, probably since we sold Demba Ba. But, you know, that's where it's at. So just got to make the most of it. I'd like us to go forward with Muto and Rondon playing together. I think there was a stage last season when Benitez did go 4-4-2. And that was around the time before Christmas that we started to pick up last year. So hopefully we'll return to that and that will do something. But yeah, it's difficult to be optimistic. But when I'm looking at it completely, you know, taking my Newcastle allegiance out of it, I just can't see Benitez going down over a full Premier League season, regardless of what players he's got at his disposal. I think he'll find a way to get there eventually. It's just, at the moment, we're just in a run of losing games. And I think Palace had it last season as well. Although there's a lot more talent in that Palace squad. Once they got a couple of results, it did seem to turn. And I with the fixtures we've got coming up, I'd expect that at Newcastle. It might be a couple of draws to start with, but I just think it will turn soon. I just think it will. It has to turn soon. I just can't see us keep losing games with Benitez. Maybe I'm overrating Benitez a little bit, but I just can't see it happening. So it's got to turn soon. That's what I think.
Yeah, there were times that were sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry, a Newcastle side that I really kind of sympathise with. It's kind of, I don't know how true this stat is, but I saw it on Twitter the other day. I just pulled it up. Kind of Premier League net spend since the summer of 2017. You've got Brighton, who have spent 110 million. Huddersfield, who have spent 78 million. And then Newcastle's is 1 million, which is just staggering considering those three obviously came up at the same time. And it's, you sort of look at Newcastle, it's this massive, massive club with this massive fan base, and I've always sort of looked at them and thought of them as kind of a sleeping giant. And you've got this fantastic manager at the helm, as you say, but he's sort of working off peanuts at the moment, and it kind of becomes more and more worrying every week because the results aren't improving, and because you haven't improved that squad, it kind of, you look at it and you think, like, who is going to be the one who sort of turns these results around? I mean, Benitez is a very, very good manager, but if he hasn't sort of got the players at his disposal to do so, then that's when I think it sort of becomes a bit more of a concern.
I will tell you the player who's going to turn it around for us. He has been excellent for the last couple of games, and that's Jonjo Shelvey. We are a one-man team at the moment, and he's the guy doing it. Some of the pass he picks out, the amount of times he releases our players from goal, he's the man. He's going to take it by the scruff of the neck, and he's going to turn it, I think. And I think Rondon, once he gets fit, he's capable of scoring 10-ish goals. And I don't think there's going to, you know, as much as I like Shelvey, it's probably not going to be one player that turns it for us. It's going to be the system. That's how we got results last year. It was the system. It was being disciplined. It was being defensive, as Vlasic was talking about. That was exactly what Newcastle were. And that is eventually what's going to do it for us. I just think it's just going to take one result for the players to get a bit of confidence. Although we didn't strengthen, like, these players did get us 10th last season. So I think I don't agree it's a Championship squad. I think it's a bottom half of the Premier League squad, and I think there's a bit of talent there. But I think we've got enough about us to be confident of getting out of it, even with what we've got at the moment. It's just, I think at the moment it's just there's a lot of negativity, and I think that's just leaking into the team, and it's just causing these results. But we all know in football, one or two good results that switches it, and I think that's all it will take for Newcastle. I don't think it's helpful that Mike Ashley's always at games at the moment. I think that's really taken away from it's taken away from what we need to focus on, and that's results on the pitch. But, you know, he has every right to go to games as owner, and I don't know what he's doing there because he doesn't really show an interest. So there's something going on, and I'm sure it will come out soon. And I don't think Benitez will leave before the end of the season. So on that basis, I think we'll be fine. But I could be wrong, and I think we're one of the teams that need to worry about relegation. But I'm just not getting totally carried away about it yet. You know, we haven't played 10 games yet. You know, I think. We've got a lot of, and we've played five of the top six. So the results against Brighton and Leicester at home were very poor. But I think we've played five of last year's top six, and in those games we scored in every one of those games, which is ridiculous. But against any team that we played that wasn't in last year's top six, we haven't scored, and that's a problem. So I think the fixtures haven't been kind to us. But I think, you know, that it was, the result against Brighton was awful, and that was a game that really does look bad. But I think it's just one game, and we got Southampton next. And if we win that, completely different complexion on us, I think.
Yeah, we mentioned Newcastle's struggles up front, which unfortunately, Sam, is a relatively easy segue over to Crystal Palace. Benteke obviously struggled last year, didn't get off to a scoring start this year. Then his last match started with September 1st, and you've only scored two league goals since then. What's the solution up front for you right now?
To be honest, I don't think we have one at the moment. It's been a problem, I'd say it goes all the way back to when Glenn Murray left, actually, to an extent. We had this sort of summer where Glenn Murray left, Dwight Gayle left, Benteke came in. And in all fairness to Benteke, he actually had a really good first season, scored something like 16, 17 goals, helped us to stay up. But obviously, since then, it's kind of been a downward trajectory. And I've started to think that he's cursed, in all honesty, because there have been some chances that he missed, or I think it's physically impossible to do so. And since he's been injured, it's kind of become apparent that there's not actually a better solution within the squad. For all his kind of goal-scoring faults, Benteke is a player who will sort of occupy two centre-backs, who'll give the defenders something else to think about and sort of create that space for Zaha and Townsend to sort of have a bit more freedom to run into. And that's kind of when Zaha is at his most dangerous. So I think the big problem for us at the moment is that Benteke being out, teams are instantly kind of recognising that Zaha is the only threat. And if you shut out Zaha, you essentially shut out Palace. And it's become very, very obvious that Jordan Ayew isn't a guy who's going to kind of get you 10 goals a season, especially not in our system, I don't think. Alexander Sørloth, a guy we signed last year, relatively unproven, Norwegian, still quite young. Whenever he's played, he's sort of not looked like a Premier League striker. He hasn't quite looked up to speed. And then our only other option, I guess, is playing Townsend and Zaha through the middle together, which is something that worked effectively last year. But teams kind of seem to have savvied up to it. But I think one of the main problems at the moment, really, is our midfield. We kind of haven't figured out. Hodgson at least hasn't figured out what our best team is. Johan Cabaye left over the summer. Ruben Loftus. Sorry, say that again.
And it's October.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, he brought in Max Meyer over the summer, Coyote from West Ham as well. Two very decent players. Obviously, Meyer came with a very good reputation, but we haven't seen much of him. Coyote has sort of proven himself in the Premier League over the last couple of seasons. And yet Hodgson seems happy to persist with Jeffrey Schlupp in a kind of three-man midfield, which is bizarre considering that he normally functions as a left-back or a left-winger. So it's kind of been one of those this season where there's been a lot of head-scratching from the fans, because it's kind of, we've kind of thought that it feels almost like the team should be picking itself, and then Hodgson sort of goes and picks another one. It's all a bit bizarre at the moment. I think we've always been one of those teams that tends to have these slow starts every year, and then everyone looking from the outside will think, oh, why are Palace struggling? Because they've got such a good quality squad. And it's even more frustrating for us because we can't actually figure it out ourselves. And the problem is, I don't think we can keep relying on these kind of turn of the year pickup runs of form, because I mean, you look at last season, we finished it playing some really good football. We beat Leicester 5-0, we beat West Brom 2-0 on the last day of the season. We were sort of going to places, playing some really good stuff. And I think Palace are probably one of the very, very few teams who have a unique ability to kind of put out any positivity within months. And it's sort of, I know that Jake was talking there about the negativity at Newcastle at the moment. It's sort of pervading through the stands at Palace, especially with the whole sort of situation with the Homesdale fanatics as well not being there. Sort of every murmur of discontent sort of is growing louder and louder at the moment. It's a bit concerning.
Yeah, another weirdly concerning thing, at least from the outside looking in, it seems like literally every week you lose a match late in that match. Is there any way to fix that? Is it tactics? Is it just tired legs towards the ends of matches? Or am I wrong and it doesn't happen as frequently as it seems?
That's been another bugbear of this season, actually, with Hodgson. Is kind of, it's been very confusing, his sort of reluctance to make any substitution. We've been getting to 60, 70, 80 minutes, and it's becoming quite apparent that the players are tiring, or the system isn't working, and we aren't breaking the opposition down. And sort of Hodgson still stood there on the touchline. There's no subs getting warmed up. And I think Sunday's game against Everton was kind of a prime example of that happening. We were in the game. Obviously, Milivojevic missed the penalty. And then Everton started to grow into it a little bit more, and they brought on Calvert-Lewin and Cenk Tosun, who obviously both of them went on to score. And I think the real kick in the teeth was that as soon as they went 2-0 up, Hodgson decides to make his first substitution of the game.
I think they had made all three before you made your first.
Yeah, and it's just strange because we have a stronger bench than we did last year. I mean, obviously Meyer's been on the bench most of the time. Coyote's been on there a few times. And there have been quite a few games, like the Bournemouth one we conceded late. Watford was one where we sort of got into the second half and it became quite apparent that changes needed to be made. Even some of the home games as well. I think Newcastle, Jake, I don't know if you watched that one, but we were sort of pounding down the door without really getting anywhere. And it was quite obvious that we needed another creative midfielder on like Meyer. And there was sort of 80, 85th minute to do so. And by that point, it's kind of too late. So it feels strange to be criticising Hodgson, especially after last season and kind of the miracle that he worked. But I think given the fact that we had a fairly, I wouldn't say easy, but a fairly favourable start to the season in the sense that we've not played many of the big teams yet. When you look at our points return, having only won two games and drawn one against sides that kind of you'd expect to be getting points off, questions have to actually start being asked of the manager.
Do you think that the substitutes are there that could impact the match? Do you think maybe it's a squad depth issue, or do you think it is just a tactical weakness of his?
I think it's a tactical weakness thing at the moment. As I said, the squad's probably strengthened over the summer. We've never had a really deep squad. We've always been one of those sides who has an over reliance on our starting 11, and to be honest, has an over reliance on one player, Zaha, obviously. But I think this season I've looked at the bench and I've seen players who come on and make a difference, and then when they eventually have come on, they have made a difference, but by that point they haven't got long enough to affect the game and sort of swing it in our favour.
Next up, we'll head into Player Watch, where we're going to quickly discuss the players that have impressed us the most at our clubs this season. Jake, we'll lead in with you in Newcastle, difficult though that may be.
Yeah, that is difficult. A player that's impressed at Newcastle this season, well, that is difficult. I think Shelby's probably the one. I mentioned him earlier. I think he's been really good, created a lot of chances. I think he leads, or he's one of the top English players in chances created, so I think he's doing really well there. And he seems to have really stepped up his game recently, even though the team is struggling. He seems to really relish the opportunity to be the main man in that team. And hopefully, you know, we get the results to support his performances, because I think they're currently going under the radar, despite him playing some of the best of his career. Another one would be, I think, Dubravka has been very good in goal. You know, that says a lot about where we are. I'm talking about our goalkeeper. And I think Fernandez has been another one. He's come in and done quite well. But apart from that, there's not a lot to write about or talk about in Newcastle. I think they're the three players that I think have done well. But, it's not been good at all. But, yeah, Shelby would be the main one for me.
All right. And for Palace, Sam, who do you think has really stood out?
I mean, a lot of people would probably expect me to say Zaha, but I'd actually point to another guy who's actually come through our academy, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, one that everyone's kind of cottoned onto as the fantasy Premier League bargain. It's strange. He's one we kind of stumbled across last year. He only sort of came into the team because of injuries. It wasn't necessarily through merit. We had sort of this period last year where we sort of had 8, 9, 10 first team players out, and sort of the only option was to bring him in and play him at right back. And I think the first games that he was playing last year was something like Spurs, Manchester United, and Chelsea, and he didn't look out of place. And this season was kind of a question. It was always going to be a matter of either him or Joel Ward for that right back spot. And I think it was quite a big sort of show of faith from Hodgson that he didn't go and sign a right back in the summer, because that's kind of been a problem position for us over the last year. And he's fully justified that decision. He kind of, there's sort of like, there's still a rawness to him. He gets caught out of position a few times, but he's got the speed to sort of get back and make these unbelievably well-timed challenges to sort of get himself out of trouble in those situations. And going forward, he's a massive threat as well. There's been a few times this season where you look up and he's one of those players who can kind of get you out of your seat, and he's a right back. I point back to that Fulham game in the opening day again. I think put him in a spot of bother with a crossfield pass in our own half, and he was sort of swarmed straight away by Mitrovic, managed to hold him off, which is no mean feat in itself. Shimmied past Sessegnon and sort of threaded this perfectly weighted three ball to Zaha, which he wanted to score from. And it was one of those moments where you sort of looked and thought, right, okay, this kid's actually a player, and he's someone that opposition fans have been praising after every game as well. I remember on the Eagles Beak Twitter account earlier today, we actually got a tweet from an Everton fan saying that obviously we weren't going to agree with his general perception of the game, but what a talent that Wan-Bissaka is. And I think I agree, and for his age, he's only going to get better at this point.
Yeah, also currently leads the Premier League in tackles one, does Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
Well, yeah. He's got an interesting habit, actually. Me and my brother often point out at games that very unnecessarily goes to ground sometimes, but because he times them so well, it's always really enjoyable to watch regardless.
Yeah, you don't want to do it too much, but he is nailing it at the moment. And as you said, I think, weirdly, this is one of the times where fantasy football almost informed actual football fans, where a lot of people probably wouldn't have been paying attention. But because of that, I think his hype has been building in both the real sphere and in the fantasy sphere. Mm-hmm. For Tottenham, the player that's been most impressive this year is a tough one because a lot of our World Cup stars have been in and out of the squad. So I'm going to just go left field, and it might be a little bit of recency bias, but Eric Lamella has been incredible this year, as we thought he would be. Maybe just behind him is Lucas, and I'd say the only thing that separates them is really the end product is Lamella. I think he has 5 goals and 2 assists in all competitions already this season, and most of them were in substitute appearances because his first Premier League start was this week. So we're starting to finally see some like excellent wing play on the right, which we really haven't done in a long time, really since Townsend had that good half season for us, and then before that, Lennon. So it has not been a fantastic time for Tottenham over on the right wing, as Lamella struggled with injuries, didn't really settle in when he first moved to us. So the fact that now all of a sudden Lucas and Lamella can both provide for us on the right wing has been really invaluable. And it'll be interesting to see them kind of battle out for that position throughout the season. And if Son doesn't really hit form soon, it'd be really interesting if we end up seeing one on either side, maybe push Lucas to the left. And see what we can do with both of them on the pitch. But the pace that you have when you have both Lucas and Son on either side is something that we've also missed for years. So wouldn't be surprised to see that. But for me, I'm going to go with Eric Lamella for now, whose creativity and goal scoring, which we didn't really expect too much, have both been fantastic for us thus far this season. All right, now we're going to head into match previews. It'll be the last thing we discuss today. For Tottenham, we obviously play midweek against PSV in the Champions League. We're in a bit of a tight spot there in Europe at the moment, considering Messi's injury. We'll cover both matches that Inter have against Barcelona, which could lead to them actually picking up points, whereas we were unable to, at least at the Camp Nou. But for us, in our particular match, we genuinely have to win. Obviously, Herving Lanzano, the player that you need to be the most worried about when you're facing PSV at the moment. Hopefully, we can contain him just because our wingbacks are fairly decent. But it's going to be a tough one for sure. No Vertonghen, obviously, as he's still hurt. No Dele Alli. It sounds like he'll be back the week after that. But fortunately, Eriksen back, Dembele back, both of them made the bench against West Ham. Both of them should be fully fit for this match here. The main concern is Kane, who, kind of like the Newcastle thing we talked about earlier, when Kane put in those 3 or 4 good matches, starting with the Brighton match and then afterwards, including that couple of assist performance against Spain, it's so easy to just think, oh, light switch, now he's fully back. But the performance against West Ham surely shows that he's not just back, just as before he wasn't just awful. There's obviously gradients in between there, which narratively is frustrating, and as a fan is frustrating, because you'd love to just say Harry Kane's back and here come his 30 goals. But we'll see. We could really use a couple of goals from him in this one to try to keep pace in the group stage here in the Champions League. We'll follow that up by coming to you, Jake, talking about Southampton versus Newcastle. You mentioned it earlier that a win here could really cure a lot of the ills.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. I'm actually going to the game, so that's going to be fun. Not really looking forward to the game at all, but I'm sure it'll be a good day in Southampton. I think it's going to be, yeah, it's two teams that don't score a lot of goals. I think it's going to be tight. Last year, we should have won at St Mary's. We went 1-0 and 2-1 up, and we should have seen that one through. We beat them at home, so, you know, we can take a lot of confidence from that. And think that this is a team that we normally play well against. I think they've probably, you know, they've had a better start than us, but I still don't think they've been great. I think Danny Ings has been a good addition, but there's still a lot of problems in that team. And I don't think Marquise is ever going to, you know, manage a team to a top half Premier League finish again. So there's that. So I think we can go here with real optimism. Well, we can't go there with optimism because we are awful at the moment, but it's a game that we can go and think maybe we might not lose this one. So I seem to be quite confident today, so I'm going to say we're going to go there and win. I think it's going to be a result that turns our season. I think they're definitely a team that that we can beat. So yeah, I'll say we'll win. I don't think it's gonna be pretty, but I can see maybe a goal from a set piece or something getting us a win, and hopefully that starts us climbing the table.
All right, and Sam, it may be a little difficult to preview your match against Arsenal as they're currently playing as we record, but we can start up front. Will it just be Zaha or Zaha and Townsend up there again?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they weren't, to be honest. It's another... Well, I'm not actually going to this one. I'm going to be in Madrid, thankfully, as far away as possible. I'm not very optimistic going into the next run of fixtures. This is sort of kickstarts a really tricky four-game spell where we've got Arsenal at home, Chelsea away, I think Spurs at home, and then United away. But when you've got a run like that, it's the home games which you need to be targeting as the ones where you're going to be picking up points. So I'd like to see us go with Zaha and Townsend up front, preferably as well. Hopefully by that point, Hodgson will have realised that Max Meyer does need to be starting alongside Koyate and Milivojevic in midfield. And I think the thing with Arsenal, I think you don't really know what you're going to get with them at the moment. Obviously, they're scoring a lot more goals. Obviously, hammered Fulham in that last game. But defensively, I think they still look a bit suspect. I still have sort of a lot of reservations over Mustafi. I don't think he's kind of a top six centre-back. So I think he's someone that we could get at if we have sort of Zaha and Townsend through the middle, sort of dragging him out of space. That could create opportunities for other players to get forward, and hopefully we get some joy there. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those four game spells at the moment which you're going into with kind of minimal expectations, so whatever you get out of it is going to be a bonus.
All right, and that will wrap it up for us today. So guys, if you'd like to tell folks where they could find you or any projects you're working on, now would be a good time.
Yeah, you can get me on Twitter at Jake Jappa with two N's. I write for EPL Index and The Boot Room, among other sites, so check both of those ones out.
Yeah, you can find me at Sam_Carp on Twitter, or as I mentioned earlier, I'll be manning the Eagles Beak Twitter account on match days a lot of the time, writing the occasional article, and also a company called Sports Pro if you want to read some of my stuff on there.
All right, well, guys, thanks so much for joining us. Sam, thank you very much in particular for making your debut. I think you did a fantastic job. Jake, you were fantastic as well, but that's to be expected at this stage. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter at Kevroff. You can find my fantasy articles at Goal and ESPN, so check those out if fantasy tickles your fancy. All right, guys, thanks again for joining us. It was a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.